I could. Okay.
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 Are we ready to go, Anya?
What a pretty picture.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. Good evening. I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of May 16, 2017. Our study session this evening is focused on the Marina Expansion and Breakwater Engineering Study, and we expect to reconvene for our regular meeting at approximately 7:30. Council Member Marcioni is on the speakerphone at this time and wishes to participate in this evening's meeting in accordance with Section 3.24 of the Council's policies and procedures related to remote attendance. Under those policies and procedures, council members constituting a majority, including those not physically present, may approve Council Member Marcioni's remote attendance by speakerphone. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to allow Councilmember Marcioni to participate by speakerphone. Is there any discussion? Will all those in favor say aye?
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no? Thank you very much. The motion is approved. All right. I think we are ready to go. Maybe we should go around the table and identify ourselves for the record, please.
Jay Arnold.
At John Pascal.
Kurt Triplett.
Toby Nixon.
Dave Asher.
Penny Sweet.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much.
And Doreen Marshall.
Sorry, Doreen. All right, we're ready to get started, City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. So tonight we're going to be briefing you on the results of our Marina Expansion Breakwater Study. Just a reminder and a thank you that this was funded in part by a grant from the Port of Seattle, an economic development grant, which the council then matched in the last year's budget process. So thank you to the council as well. What we're going to do tonight is take you through the results, and we're not asking for a decision on options or phasing or anything, but the question at the end is going to be whether we want to continue to evaluate this and perhaps seek a second port grant to look at potential financing and economic development opportunities related to the marina expansion. So here to walk you through it to start off is Michael Kogel, the Deputy Director of Parks and Community Services. It's Michael.
Thank you, Kurt, and good evening, council members. I'm happy to be here this evening. This study has been a collaborative project between the city manager's office, the Public Works Department, and the Parks Department, and we're all going to be sharing in the presentation this evening. Thank you. And as such, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the folks that'll be joining me in this presentation. If you wouldn't mind, please standing, just so that the council can see you all three. I'll stand up. So, you know, Ellen Miller-Wolf, Economic Development Manager for the city. Standing next to her is Shannon Kinsella, our prime consultant for this project from Reed Middleton Incorporated. She'll be walking you through the details of the study itself. And then Brian Baker from the Public Works Department, the Capital Project Coordinator, has been doing a great job of keeping us all on track as we've gone through this project. And he's going to share with you information about the stakeholder meetings that we've had over recent weeks. So to begin, I'm going to ask Ellen to give a little bit of background on the genesis for this project and kind of walk you through, as a reminder, the waterfront demand study that was completed in 2015.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Council. Okay, a little bit of background on the concept that we're reviewing tonight. Interest in the waterfront resulted from a lot of outreach to boaters and downtown interests a number of years ago, and there was a general consensus that there was reason to look at optimizing this asset. A North Star branding study determined in 2009 that this was the major reason that people come to Kirkland, and obviously it's something that all residents enjoy as well. In 2015, the Tourism Development Committee commissioned a study by BST. BST has a great deal of expertise in maritime economic analysis, and they prepared a demand study of the waterfront, focusing on the downtown marina. Their study findings, and we call this proof of concept number one, this demand study, but they were asked whether if you built it or if you expanded it, would they come? And their findings was yes, in fact, people would come if there was more build out of the waterfront. Their study indicated that boat sales since the Great Recession had improved a great deal, that there was an underserved market on Lake Washington for transient moorage, very few public moorages, and in fact, Kirkland accounts for 64% of public moorage on Lake Washington. And then related to that, a large number of boat owners within very short access of Lake Washington, within 10 miles of Lake Washington, there are 25,000 boat owners. So it all added up to underservice and anticipated demand. There was a survey done of boaters. These are boaters that are licensed or are members, of the Marine Trades Association. There were 971 surveys sent out and 115 replies. And of those replies, 87% of their survey said they would use Kirkland if more moorage was provided. In addition, there was interest from commercial vessels, cruise operators who are seeking secure moorage and seeking to lease and also to have overnight space. There was general desire to extend the season and also calm the waters in general because it can get awfully windy and difficult to maneuver in our moorage. The economic benefits also were determined by this study to be major significance. So for every boat that moored in the downtown marina, $150 was spent in the downtown. 5% of those that moored stayed overnight in one or another of the hotels. And the good side of this is that people that use transient moorage are not using cars. So this was amazingly something that added to downtown vitality and didn't add to parking, which is a pleasure to announce. So tonight we're looking at proof of concept phase two, which is the engineering study that, as Kurt mentioned, the city manager mentioned, was taken on with our own, with port money matched by moorage funds. And the question here, how many slips can be accommodated safely, and also taking a look at breakwater concepts, which, as you know, could potentially make it safer to navigate and expand the season and obviously expand economic benefits. So with that, I am going to send it to our consultant from Reed Middleton.
Good evening, Council. I'm going to be flipping through some slides and pointing at them, so I'm not sure if you want to turn around and look at the big screen. But thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. I'm Shannon Kinsella from Reed Middleton. As Michael said, we're a longstanding civil engineering firm in the region. We've designed marinas for over 60 years, so we really love marinas. They're passionate about waterfront facilities, parks, marinas. So very honored to work with the city staff and for the city and looking at sort of what the potential options are for a facility here in downtown Kirkland. So I'm going to go through just the basic backgrounds of the study. We were hired to look at it just initial feasibility, both from an engineering and an environmental standpoint. We did a background bathymetric survey, which looks at water depths, and then looked at the existing facility and sort of given the overall constraints and opportunities at the site, what are some of the options that could be done to expand, rehabilitate the Marina Park Pier facility. So some of the key items to consider or look at, if you look on the big screen, there's an inner harbor line that's a land ownership limit. Anything beyond there is managed in state-owned lands managed by DNR. So anything outside of the Inner Harbor Line would require a negotiation and a lease with the Department of Natural Resources. And then the Outer Harbor Line is a legal limit that you cannot build anything out beyond that Outer Harbor Line. So that gave us sort of the outer boundaries of where we could look at for potential options. And then on the south side, there's the right-of-way just to the south of the existing docks and the right-of-way on the north side where the existing north dock is. So that sort of gave us the physical limits of where we could look for potential opportunities. Just a little bit about the existing facilities. They were evaluated in 2013. They're about 30 years old. Generally, timber structures can last anywhere from 25 to 50 years. They need routine maintenance and repairs. We've got an estimated life in the remaining docks of 10 to 20 years. There's annual ongoing maintenance costs and also repairs due to storm or boat damage, and those costs can vary. We did a general estimate of what it would take to replace those docks in kind, and that estimate's around $9 to $10 million. So we looked at a variety of options, some that stay relatively within the Inner Harbor Line and one that expands out to the Outer Harbor Line. Some of the things that all of these options will have in common, they'll all be required to go through the regulatory process and meet environmental regulations requirements. Some of the basic common things that they all have in common, there'll be a boat sewage pump out that folks can come and pump out their boats. That's a requirement by code and also very good environmentally. A lot of the structures will be graded. Grading of the deck surface allows for light penetration, which is better for the environment. There'll also be best management practices and things during construction that will need to be implemented to protect the fish and other habitat ecological functions that are on the site. So this is a first alternative. The exposure, the site is exposed to the southwest as well as to the north. So the existing docks are angled so that it boats more directly into the wind from the southwest, which can be some of the strongest wind. So this option has the docks in the marina, similar angle to the existing docks so that the predominant wind direction from the southwest here, the boats aren't moored sideways to the wind. All of these options show an outer dock that's accessed from shore, the south dock and the north dock. And the cost and the options all have a breakwater, similar a wall type or vertical breakwater adjacent to the docks, similar to the vertical wall breakwater that's just to the south at Kirkland Yacht Club. There's potential to look at different configurations here. One suggestion was maybe to change this angle here to make this dock as well at an angle to the southwest. So while these show general layout, there's still, we recommend the next step to really optimize the entrance breakwater configuration of how you enter this marina. But basically this option shows a extension of the north dock, an extension of the south dock, and then new slips to the north, as well as a small boat, kayak dock, small boats, kayaks, canoes, paddle boards that we've labeled a dock that is a little bit closer to shore to the swim area. There's a potential to put some markings and things to keep power boats away from the swim beach area as well and sort of isolate the different uses. Existing, you have about 41 slips, and this proposal will bring the number of slips about double up to 87, so just a little bit more than double. And all of these, commercial moorage is envisioned along the south side here, and then potential touch and go in different wind conditions on the outside as well here. In general, Argosy said that they would not like to moor in here, that they prefer to stay outside away from the busy traffic inside the facility here. So that is alternative one. This one can also be phased, where you build out the north dock and then come back and add to and or rebuild the south docks, depending on how far in the future this second phase is developed. So once this is done, there's 120 slips total. So it adds more slips. And so this first phase is about $15.4 million, and that includes construction, design, and some contingencies. Second phase is 3.1 additional in cost in million. So view, what is this going to look like? So this is a view analysis, a rendering. It shows the existing facility on top from the center portion of the park. And you can see, as the south docks are extended, it comes across, and then you also see the new north docks to the right in this picture. And then the view from the south, on the top is the existing photo view from the south. And then on the bottom, again, you can see the small kayak floats, the extension of the south docks, and then the new north docks. A little bit of a gap between the shore and the new north docks. So another option would be to straighten everything out, make it at right angles. That gets rid of some of the corners and things that are a little bit awkward. There's some things that can be put in here, but making everything perpendicular just adds a little bit more efficiency in terms of getting new slips in there. So this is alternative two, first phase, again, building out the north side and then the south outer dock. And then when it comes time to replace the south docks, replacing them with new linear perpendicular south docks here. For all of these options, as Michael said, this is really a conceptual level to sort of get you to see what could fit in there, how many slips, sort of what general configurations. We haven't done any detailed design on these docks. They could be floating, they could be fixed. You can really fit whatever you want in here. There's a few different small nuances, such as if they're floating, there has to be a gangway to get down to them. But in general, the goal is to show the city what could fit within this footprint. So there's still definitely opportunities, options to refine it. To make some selections.
Question for you, Shannon.
Yes.
Shannon, I assume the breakwater would be fixed.
The breakwater in this option is a fixed wall option because we've shown it fairly narrow right next to the docks. Mm-hmm. We do floating breakwaters, so you could potentially, if you go to an all-floating system, that outer dock could be a floating breakwater. You have to have a certain width and certain depth to really make it effective. So it might be a little bit wider than we've shown it if you went to floating breakwater structures. For now and in the view renderings, we've modeled it as a fixed wall similar to the breakwater to the south, which is a vertical concrete panel with steel piling.
And in follow-up, mm-hmm. It's outside that inner line, so we would have to lease?
So anything out here would have to have a lease. So this structure out here would need a DNR lease, which would be a long-term commitment and lease fee. Yeah. There's some different options. We looked at trying to pull, everything back in here. But once you pull in the breakwater to try to stay completely within the city property, you lose a lot of ability to add slips, and so it didn't give you a lot of value for the high cost. But as I said, one of the next steps could be sort of refining that to look at those angles, openings, and try to minimize anything that you're doing out on DNR land. So in this option, this phase, about $10.6 million, for replacing the south docks. And that gets you up to about 122 slips. View rendering, this option does keep that sort of channel down the center. So you have a little bit more of an open view down the center with docks to the south and north from the center of the park. So it just so happens that Seattle's down the center there in that photo. Mm-hmm. From the south, again, that open view is now has boats and docks in the north. So We said, hey, if you went all the way out to the Outer Harbor Line, what kind of options could you have? So this is a full build-out. It has an entrance to the south, so still protecting from the southwest, but a little bit of exposure from the south, a variety of slip sizes. Most of these slip sizes range from about 25 feet up to about 50 feet with some larger end ties. You can get some larger boats here. And then some side tie to provide some flexibility for even larger boats. And as I said, most of the commercial moorage is considered to be on the outside. We tried to keep any kind of extensive moorage out here to support the small boat ramp. So these options provide additional tie-up staging space for the small boat ramp, and then keep the boats moving away from right at the entrance of the small boat ramp. So looking at that shared use there to try to improve the boat ramp use and staging, as well as the marina facility. In all of these, the small boat dock could be its own phase. It could go with one phase or be done independently as well. And this full build out with all the breakwaters, floats, piling, or fixed piers, about 35 million. All of these options, there's sufficient water depth, so there's no need to dredge. We want to try to avoid any dredging. It's not good environmentally and adds a lot of cost. So.
Good question.
Yes.
Since you're talking about depth, mm-hmm. if you can go back there for a second.
Yes.
It never has been explained what the depth numbers mean. I'm assuming yes. that it's above or below sea level. Is that right?
So in Lake Washington, the water depths are controlled by the Corps of Engineers. They're mandated by Congress, and they vary 2 feet. So on this datum, they vary from about 18.6 down to about 16.6. So at high lake level, when the lake is at its highest, the water line is about here, just over 18. So.
But it is above sea level, right?
Well,
how do you determine
it's
that?
On the Corps of this datum is the Corps of Engineers, or I forget, there's different datums, so you can't really necessarily relate it to mean sea level, because there's different elevations based on what datum you're referring to.
So, like, what would the water depth be at, say, that B dock there?
So at high lake level, the water's just about over 18 here. And so if we go down here, I haven't looked at this for a while, I think there's about 10 to 12 feet of water here and about 20 feet of water out here.
Okay.
So, yeah, trying to find one of the contours. So this is 8 right here. So this is about 10 feet of water. Mm-hmm. And then as you go down... that's a -2, I believe, if I can read that correctly. So right in about here is about 18 feet of water at high lake level and about 16 feet of water at low lake level.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things we want to try to avoid is the shallow area around here. And there's also an outfall pipe that we're going to have to be careful to not impact out here. That's what this outfall and a little bit of shoal there is related to, an outfall.
Is that our wastewater outfall pipe?
Stormwater.
Stormwater. Yes.
Because okay. Yep. the one that we have, isn't there another outfall off the dock?
There's a stormwater. Yes. It's a stormwater right underneath the north pier, that gray section.
Right here.
I think there is a wastewater overflow from the pump station
there is.
Out there as well, right?
Yeah, there's an emergency overflow line somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's the view analysis for the... so you can see the breakwater out here. Even though it's fixed, it's fairly low in the water. And there's a view of the large alternative from the south, looking north. So as I said, the small kayak boat, small boat float could be a standalone project. Anything else? Do you want to say? In all of these options, the costs are based on full amenities, which means full electrical service to the slips. That's an option. You know, some of the smaller slips may not need electrical service, but for now we've just priced it out and included electrical service on all the slips. We've also included water, potable water, hose bibs and things that can be used to wash the docks and fill the boat holes or boat tanks. And then low-level lighting and a fire protection system, a standpipe system out on the docks, which is required by code. And then, as I mentioned, all of the options would include a boat sewage pump out.
Thank you, Shannon. Yep. Question for you from Mr. Pascal.
Yes.
Yeah, so just kind of digging into the cost just a little bit more. You talked about how the existing docks are have like 10 to 20-year lifespan left. Mm-hmm. But some of these options, alternatives, build from those existing docks. So do the costs include essentially completely refurbishing those existing structures as well?
No, we did not include what we sort of envisioned as routine maintenance of, we didn't include any major repairs in those costs. So, for example, where we build off the ends of them, we did not include repair or replacement of those existing docks. So any major refurbishment of those to support building off the end would be additional.
And if we were to choose an alternative like that, that mm-hmm. say, I mean, it seems reasonable that we would want to include, refurbishment of those existing structures, because otherwise we're building off of things that will... degrade in 10 or 15 years, right?
So yes.
It seems like we'd want to account for that somehow.
Yeah, for any of the options where you're retaining the southern docks, you really, part of the financial review planning will be making sure that those are still structurally sound, safe, repaired, that the decking is in good condition, and potentially improvements would be new decking. As well as any kind of structural repairs that would be needed to keep them with their right capacity and safe.
It seems like, just for staff, it seems like there's just a base cost that you want to start from, looking out that we just have to spend if we want to maintain what we have. And then from there, it's an additive to expand, because we're going to have to find money to do that regardless, right? Yeah.
Mr. Arnold.
You mentioned that different ways this could be phased. For those different phasing, could you also choose to do just half the project, or are there any dependencies as far as protection from having both sides of it? For example, could we only do the south part of it, which would preserve the existing kind of view corridor?
You could do the south portion. The outer structure with the breakwater, sort of that extension, and then extension of these docks. As I said, the site's exposed from the southwest and the north. The southwest is much more of a longer fetch or distance and much higher storm conditions. So ideally, at a minimum, you're protecting from the southwest. There's still winds pick up in the afternoon from the north. There can be some northerly storms that come down as well. So if you don't build the north, you're still having some exposure from the north. But you could phase. There is quite a bit of opportunities to phase different ways here.
Okay. And for the cost and design that you've done the estimates for, do these include public access to the end of the dock and kind of from going out to the outer line view areas or benches or anything like that?
Yes. Yeah, we talked about that specifically as we were going through talking with the various stakeholders, the staff. These will all meet ADA accessibility, particularly on the outside, particularly with the passenger vessels, but just getting people, it's not just for the boaters. People can come out to the end. Right now, we've shown these piers or floats as 10-foot wide. City code is 8-foot wide. So that these will require a variance, but there was, you know, concern with the amount of people, not just the boaters, but the public, pedestrians coming out, the ability to put some benches, some things out there, that it was justified to seek that variance, go with a wider dock because of the level of use, not just for the boaters, but for pedestrians.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm ready. Thank you.
Good evening, City Council and Madam Mayor. We'll get back to where we are. Okay. So with the help of Shannon's concepts and Ellen Miller-Wolf, we took kind of this whole show on the road to everybody to get some feedback from people and all our community groups. Some of the stakeholder review that we talked to, we took it to the council committees, the park board, tourism development committee, the tourism network meeting, the KDA, downtown merchants group, chamber of commerce a couple times, and CAN, and then also Shannon was able to talk with Waterways and Argosy as well to get some feedback on our conceptual design. So if you look in your packets, you have kind of like a full list of everything that we got generally feedback-wise. If you just hit on essentially the highlights there, most people supported this moving forward, and they encouraged the expansion at the marina. There was a lot of interest in the breakwater for safety and boating and navigating, and it felt like it would provide a better overall year-round facility for people. And there was some desire to improve all the facilities for the water, electricity, sewage pump out, things like that. There's also a lot of talk about kind of upland improvements, which weren't necessarily part of this whole study. There was a lot of talk about environmental impacts and the permitting process. Everyone was very interested in how you essentially build this the most environmentally friendly way possible, and how do you maintain it in an environmental way. There was some concern about the overall cost and how does it get paid for, which kind of stemmed the overall financial analysis and that. And there was also concern over the loss of views from the marina. Is there any other questions about the outreach at this time?
Thank you. So you had a very expansive packet. So we gave you a lot of information, a lot of reading material. We wanted to touch on the highlights of that to give you plenty of time for discussion. The staff memo suggested some discussion questions, of which I have on the screen here to get you going. But we're all here to answer any questions that you might have about the work that we've done, and take direction from you on interest in continuing this research.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the council? Mr. Triplett, did you want to make a...
I just had one clarification to Councilmember Pascal's question. I think there was a bullet point at the beginning that showed some amount for replacing or renovating the
right.
dock. What went into that estimate?
Yeah, so we did ask Shannon to do a cost takeoff on looking at our existing marina, if we were to replace it. And again, the estimate is that notwithstanding routine maintenance that we have to do, and there has an existing remaining shelf life of 10 to 20 years, that the cost to do that in today's dollars would be $9 to $10 million. And that would not be any expansion would not include a breakwater. That would just be a replace like for like.
And when we need to do that, would that just be general park CIP funds that would be needed for that, or would there be any other funding source for that kind of?
So we do collect some revenue from the facility. We basically have four sources of revenue, and we generate annually right now anywhere between $150,000 and $160,000, so not a lot. Mm-hmm. That comes from the boat launch. That comes from the recreational overnight moorage. It comes from the tour dock use, And then we also have a lease with Argosy for permanent moorage of one of their vessels. So that's the revenue that we have. That does go into the general fund right now. We do have a tour dock reserve that has a modest amount in there now that helped pay for partially for this study. With respect to other funding sources, I do have a slide here that talks about different grant opportunities. There are a few grant opportunities through the state of Washington's Recreation and Conservation Office. ALEA, the Aquatic Lands Enhancement Act, is actually federal money that gets passed through the state for various projects. There's a maximum grant award of $500,000 for that particular program. That is particularly useful for the sorts of amenities at the marina that would enhance pedestrian access and pedestrian safety, helping us fund any upland or park-related improvements that are associated with the marina expansion. The Boating Infrastructure Grant, or BIG program, is for larger boats, bigger boats. That's how I always remember. I think 26 feet or more. And by the way, there is a section of the report that talks about these different grant opportunities in more detail. It's on page 18 of the Reed Milton report, page 83 of the PDF. And the big program is also for recreational moorage for larger vessels. Boating facilities program is for recreational boating. Each of these grants are relatively modest amounts, and they do require matching funding. And then Ellen maybe can share a little bit of information about possible opportunities from the Port of Seattle.
So in terms of further study, if we were to do a financial study, third proof of concept, the port is likely going to be providing funds for economic development again next year, so that's a source for that work. I also talked with Dave McFadden, who's the head of economic development for the port, tonight, and they could potentially be a development partner and help us with some of these capital improvements there. They're expecting they would be a patient partner. It could be for some length of time, reasonable length of time, and they would expect some sort of return on investment, reasonable return on investment. But if we're able to put together some good numbers for them via a study that we're proposing tonight, they would take a serious look at it.
Thank you, Ellen. Mr. Nixon, then Mr. Usher.
Have we looked at all yet at public-private partnerships, whether a multi-marina operator, and I can think of a couple companies that operate multiple marinas, would be interested in helping to fund the capital costs as part of a long-term contract for operations or something like that, where they would get a return off of that? Is that done anywhere else, and have we explored whether there might be someone who would like to do that here?
Within the scope of this analysis, we have not,
okay,
not done that. But we certainly, that could be a possible next step for us to pursue.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Can you put up the first slide at the beginning of the slide deck?
Just press home.
Yeah. There's no clamor for filling up spaces. It's so beautiful. that. But it, I think the view slides sort of cement my feeling about this is that when you're in Marina Park, when you're in the heart of our community, you feel like you're on the lake. When I go to Shill Shoal or to Palisades Restaurant and look out at Elliott Bay Marina or the Shill Shoal Marina, I definitely don't feel like I'm in Puget Sound. I haven't heard a resounding economic case, and it would have to be really resounding to make a permanent change in the heart of the city. I can't get past that. You're really messing with the core of the community there. So that's my sense of it.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet?
Since I spend a whole lot of my time looking at this view, it really is most vital when there are a bunch of boats out there. It does not, in my mind, detract from the view. It just sort of adds to the vitality. So I think it's unfortunate that we started out with a picture of the empty marina. It's not like that when the sun comes out. And I believe that it's our duty, frankly, to evaluate whether or not there is an opportunity here. Many of us who, you know, operate downtown on the lake recognize that we've got beautiful floating parks all the way around the chain, right? So this just happens to be the one that has boats in it. And when you get all the sails up there, I thought the depictions that they presented us with were beautiful. So it's just it's a question of, I guess, taste. I don't feel like it's putting anything at risk. I do think it's worth it to investigate whether this could be a financial boon to the community and to downtown, give us that third level of restaurant rotations. So I fully support going ahead, doing a full financial analysis.
Mr. Arnold.
I have similar concerns as Mr. Asher on looking at some of the visualizations of this, but I do recognize that we are going to need to make a major investment in the marina, given the age of our facilities. And there are improvements that need to be made, both for safety and capacity. I'm interested in moving forward with financial analysis, though, with some options that say, what happens if the improvements and the expansion are confined to one side or the other, so that we can make the choice of what this looks like on the other side. Given that this is tens of millions of dollars and the marina fees are generating hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's a big lift to make these happen anyway. So I think there's plenty of time to make decision of what kind of scale this expansion would look like.
Mr. Basquiat?
For me, it comes down to priorities. And so the reason I brought up the cost of just improving what we have today and maintaining that into the future is because that's a significant cost that we don't know how we're going to pay for. I have an opportunity to go through the park CIP quite often, and there's a lot of really great projects there that have been sitting there for a long time that this is going to compete for some of that money, even with being successful on some of those grants, because those grants still require quite a bit of matching dollars. So I kind of think of what the end game is here. And to me, it's we need to maintain what we have. We need to, if we can improve upon it a little bit and expand upon it, particularly with that small boat moorage, that's really intriguing to me. And I do think it's worth evaluating the financial piece of how much that's going to cost, because we do need to plug that into our CIP eventually, regardless of whether it's an expansion or if it's just a rebuild somehow, and or adding a breakwater to make it what we have more viable. So I definitely am concerned about the views and things like that. I think when people see some of that, I'd be really interested in hearing more about what the community thinks of that, but that's kind of my thoughts so far.
Thank you. Mr. Nixon.
So first, I think that some of the view issues can be addressed by tweaking the lengths of some of the docks to preserve the view corridor. What we've seen here mostly is maximizing the capacity, leaving, you know, the narrowest feasible channel between the north and the south, but we don't have to build docks that are that long. In terms of the financing, I'm not interested in using general fund dollars that would detract from other park projects. I'm not interested in going out for a bond on this. We have more important things to ask the public for. So my main interest is if we can figure out a way for it to pay for itself. You know, by increasing the capacity and increasing the revenue, having additional facilities, increasing the desirability of it as a destination, to have enough money to do the debt service. And we'll only know if that's possible if we do the financial analysis. So I completely support doing that to get a reasonable idea of whether it would be possible to do a project that would be self-supporting.
Thank you. I agree with absolutely every person who's spoken. I mean, really, I thought there's not really much more for me to add. I'm really concerned about the views. I also think we're dealing with growth of our population, and we're trying to expand all kinds of facilities and make investments in infrastructure to give people more opportunities. I'm interested in proceeding with the feasibility, and I think you're right. If we could do, Mr. Pascal, if we could do, if we know we are going to have to spend $10 million in 10 years, maybe a modest, at least, improvement, you know, increase in capacity would be a good thing. And I think Mr. Arnold just nailed it on my that's exactly how I feel about this subject. Ms. Marchione, did you have something to add for us?
I do. I agree with a lot of what's been said, and I think we should continue to look at the feasibility of how we might finance some of this. I also wonder, are the revenues that come in, are they anywhere close to an amount that we could bond against them for money to make improvements there? But I would like to look at every possibility, any partnerships, as Mr. Nixon mentioned, of people that might want to work with us to keep the marina open and expanded. And I just think this is a treasure that we need to keep working on to keep it going.
So it sounds like there's a consensus around going to the next step, yes?
Yes, to at least get more information, but certainly no commitments as to what we would do once we have that information. Right. Much fuller discussion to be had with the community and with the council after that.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay, well, thank you very much, Michael, Ellen, Shannon, and Brian. We really appreciate your presentation. And we're going to return at 7:30 for our regular meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll call you back at 7:30, Doreen.
Thank you. We're live, Mayor.
Good evening and welcome. We are back in session following a study session on the Marina Park expansion and breakwater engineering study. If I can ask for the roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Councilmember Marchione?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda tonight is under item 5. It is honors and proclamations. It's the Affordable Housing Week proclamation. City Manager.
All right. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. So Affordable Housing Week is an annual regional initiative by the Housing Development Consortium to highlight the need for affordable housing in cities in King County and especially East King County. Through education and advocacy, the Housing Development Consortium works collaboratively with public and private organizations to meet the housing needs of limited income people throughout the Puget Sound region. And there are over 120 member organizations. So Kirkland has a long history of initiatives related to affordable housing, and we're going to celebrate that today. And Amy Voltz, who is representing the nonprofit organization and one of our best partners, Imagine Housing, is attending to receive the proclamation on behalf of the consortium.
Thank you very much. And Councilmember Asher will be reading this proclamation for us.
Welcome. A proclamation of the City of Kirkland proclaiming May 15th through the 22nd, 2017, as Affordable Housing Week in Kirkland, Washington. Whereas all people should have access to safe, healthy, and affordable homes, and whereas studies have found that each $100 increase in median rent results in a 15% increase in homelessness in metro areas and a 39% increase in homelessness in nearby suburban and rural areas, and whereas our regional planning efforts have identified affordable housing as a critical component of making homelessness rare, brief, and one time, and whereas everyone benefits from affordable housing, including the people who reside in these properties, their neighbors, businesses, employers, and the community as a whole, and whereas united in an effort to raise public awareness, communities throughout King County are participating in local Affordable Housing Week efforts to inform the public of the critical need to preserve and increase affordable housing in our communities. And whereas the City of Kirkland endorses the goals, objectives, and purposes of Affordable Housing Week, and in so doing, recommits itself to ensuring that our community thrives with opportunity and that all people in it live with dignity in safe, healthy, and affordable homes. Now, therefore, the Mayor of Kirkland, Amy Wallen, does hereby proclaim May 15th through the 22nd, 2017, as Affordable Housing Week. Signed this 16th day of May.
Thank you, City Council members, Mayor Wallen, and City Manager Kurt Triplett, for proclaiming this week as Affordable Housing Week. We'd also like to thank you for increasing Kirkland's budget contribution to ARCH, for supporting Imagine Housing and other nonprofits in developing affordable housing units and the future Women and Family Shelter, and also for challenging the Housing Strategy Advisory Group to make bold recommendations back to the City Council to better address the need for affordable housing in Kirkland, where less than 20% of the people that work in the city live in the city, and 54% of Kirkland jobs pay less than $50,000 a year. We'd also like to invite you to attend Imagine Housing's inclusive East Side event at Velocity Apartments, located at the South Kirkland Park and Ride, on May 18th from 4 to 6 p.m., and to engage in additional opportunities to support affordable housing. I'm Amy Voles, representing Imagine Housing, and I'd like to turn it over to Joy from HopeLink.
Hi, I'm Joy Horvachuk. I'm the Family Development Case Manager at our Kirkland HopeLink, and I wanted to thank you guys for proclaiming it Affordable Housing Week, and also just encourage you to continue to invest money into affordable housing in this area, as I work with 20 to 25 families in your area that are experiencing homelessness or unstably housed, and it is a real struggle to help them find more housing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we should be very proud of our efforts on affordable housing. I know that we're one of the leaders in the region on creative initiatives, and our city manager serves on the board of ARCH, and I think we should celebrate our success and be proud of all of us, but there's so much more work to be done, isn't there? The next item on our agenda is also under honors and proclamations. It's the Kids to Parks proclamation. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this proclamation proclaims May 20th, 2017 is Kid to Park Day. And Kids to Park Day is a national day of outdoor play organized by the National Parks Trust in cooperation with many other agencies. And the proclamations express our interest in encouraging kids and adults to visit all parks in the region and the nation, but especially Kirkland's parks, because we have an exceptional group of them. And Kobe Chu, who is our youth representative to the Park Board, is here to attend the council meeting and receive the proclamation.
Excellent. And Councilmember Nixon will be reading this proclamation.
Kobe.
A proclamation of the City of Kirkland proclaiming May 20th, 2017 as Kids to Parks Day in Kirkland, Washington. Whereas the National Park Trust is dedicated to preserving parks today and creating park stewards for tomorrow. And whereas May 20th, 2017 marks the fifth annual Kids to Park Days organized and launched by the National Park Trust. And whereas Kids to Parks Day is a nationwide day of play and open to all children and adults, encouraging them to spend time outdoors and connect with nature. And whereas it is important to introduce a new generation to our nation's parks. And whereas we should support children in leading a more active lifestyle to combat the issues of childhood obesity, diabetes, and other health conditions. And whereas Kids to Parks Day will broaden children's appreciation for nature and the outdoors. And whereas the City of Kirkland possesses an extraordinary park system, including 52 neighborhood, community, and waterfront parks that should be explored every chance possible. Now, therefore, Amy Wallen, Mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim May 20th, 2017 as Kids to Parks Day in Kirkland, Washington, and calls upon all residents, especially children, to visit a neighborhood, state, or national park any time of year and in any community.
I, as a youth representative on the park board, would like to commend our city council for the great work that they have done over the years and currently to forward the youth representation in parks across the city and across our region. And would like to say that I am very grateful for having been able to grow up in a city with such amazing public parks. Thank you.
We are so fortunate to have representatives on our boards and commissions, members of the youth, and Kobe is just an inspiration to all of us. He is a hard worker. Thank you, Kobe.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. He is a superstar. So another exciting celebration tonight is our Community Hero Award. This is item 5C on the agenda. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So as you know, the Community Hero Award is one that is given out by the City of Kirkland and the Kirkland Fire Department for residents who take immediate action to save a fellow resident's life. And so here to tell you that inspiring story is our Fire Chief, Joe Sanford.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, council members, staff, and citizens. It's my pleasure to once again present an award for a Community Hero Award. And at this time, I'd like Stephen Chari and David Ruff to come forward, along with Deputy Chief Tim Day and Deputy Chief Helen Ahrens-Byington.
I wonder if we should go help.
On Monday, April 17th at 9:21 p.m., Kirkland resident Doug Ruff collapsed when exercising at the 24-hour fitness. Hearing the commotion, fellow Kirkland resident Stephen Chari went into action. Working with another bystander, he disentangled Mr. Ruff from a piece of exercise equipment, initiated a call for help, and repositioned Mr. Ruff to a safe area on the floor of the gym. He then began CPR and requested the businesses automated external defibrillator. Mr. Chari delivered 2.5 minutes of effective CPR before the AED arrived. He then applied the AED patches, allowed the machine to analyze Mr. Ruff's heart rhythm, and delivered a single shock, which was indicated by the AED. After another 45 seconds of CPR, Mr. Ruff began breathing and then regained consciousness. I'm happy to report that after treatment at Evergreen Health and Overlake Medical Centers, Mr. Ruff has been discharged from the hospital without any lasting effects. The actions Stephen Chari exemplify are the best about our community and remind us of the effectiveness of the region's tiered emergency response system. Therefore, the City of Kirkland and the Kirkland Fire Department acknowledge and recognize the efforts of Mr. Stephen Chari for his actions in saving a fellow citizen's life.
Chari, I wonder if you'd come up and let the council members shake your hand. Glad you're with us. And your family must be feeling so grateful, and I think that it's just a testament to what kind of community we have, that it's we watch out for each other. Nobody walks away.
I'd like to publicly thank the council, because this is something that would normally be done by the city of Boston, but City Kirkland stepped up, and I really feel like it's appropriate and appreciate it.
Thank you. It's going to be hard to go on with the regular business at this time, but that is the job we are here to do. So we are going to move on to our next item on our agenda, which is communications. It's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for a public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and up to 3 opponents may address the council. So I do have a sign-in sheet. The first person to have signed in is Larry Kilbride.
Wait, I follow that.
Take your time. We haven't seen you in a while. Welcome, sir.
You may need to adjust the microphone.
Oh, yeah, we might need to have you. There you go.
I thought I was taller than I was. Hi, my name is Larry Kilbride. I live at 13125 Northeast 128th Place in Kirkland, Washington. I've lived in Kirkland since 1967, so I consider myself to be a citizen of Kirkland. I just want to make some comments on the previous meeting about the marina. First of all, thank you for investigating it. I would like to say that I believe that that marina is God's gift to Kirkland, mm-hmm. and we need to take advantage of it. I've walked that daily, that pier down there. It's ugly as it exists, and it's unsafe as it exists. And when you're talking about $10 million to rebuild something, I believe the city attorney would tell you that you could lose $10 million really fast if someone gets hurt down there. I just wanted to point that out to you. Listening to the presentation, I think it would be foolish to add new to the old, because you wouldn't have accomplished much. Everything is contingent on breakwaters, because without the breakwaters, it won't be a nice marina. With the reservations, you would be full in that marina. I know this. I'm a boater. I have family that's boaters, and I know a lot of them. They would come here, but they don't come because you can't make reservations. So they rather than go through the hassle of driving your boat all the way over here from Lake Union and find out you can't get in, Just go somewhere else where you can get reservations. I think that's important. The new marina would make you new money because you could raise your rates and the boaters would pay to come to Kirkland. And they spend their money here. The people with the bigger boats spend the most money. The little docks where the ski boats come in, they spend 50 cents on a hamburger. So, I think we should have fewer of those and more for the boaters, 25, 30-foot boaters. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming.
I want to know where you get a hamburger for 50 cents.
All right. The next person to have signed in is Samantha St. John. Welcome.
Hi there. So I'm Samantha St. John, the Executive Director of the Kirkland Chamber of Commerce, and I'm here to talk about an issue that's not new for you, parking in downtown Kirkland. And we would like to show our appreciation for the what we voted on as a board back in the fall, which is the all-day paid parking at the Marina Park lot. With the addition of the lot here at City Hall, we believe that that will help bring employees away from parking in downtown. Our downtown businesses have expressed very strongly that they want more spots for their customers, so we think that this will help, and it also gives a little bit more time for people to use our salons and eat in our restaurants and shop in our stores. So we would like to reiterate our support for the all-day parking and thank you for doing that. I would also like to encourage the study of parking under the ball field in Peter Kirk Park, going with that same issue of us needing more parking in downtown Kirkland. We think that it's good to at least study what that would look like and see the different possibilities there. So that is all I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is Jessica Beck.
Thank you very much, Mayor Wallen and council members. My name is Jessica Beck. I'm the current Kirkland Chamber of Commerce Board President, and I'm here today to voice our support for the financial feasibility study of the Moorage expansion. To reiterate my prior commenter's encouragement for the possible expansion in whatever form it may take, we're not taking a position at this moment on which of the possible iterations of the Moorage expansion we might endorse, but we just think that it's a great idea to continue with the financial feasibility study and wanted to voice our support. The merchants that are members of our organization have also voiced support, and we just think it's a great idea. I'm under a minute, so that's all I had to say. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you being here. The next person to have signed in is Jean Large.
Good evening. I live here in Kirkland on 225 4th Avenue. I'd like to speak very briefly about two issues. The Affordable Housing Week proclamation, thank you very much. I would encourage everyone who can to attend the meeting this Thursday, the 18th, at South Kirkland Park and Ride. The Imagine Housing folks have a serious meeting there to talk about what will we be doing. As you may have remembered, I have been a proponent of affordable housing. I suggested that the parking space that we've created on the south side of the City Hall be first two layers of parking underground and then three layers of affordable housing on top of that. I'm still advocating for that. It would be an excellent use of public property, and we as the citizens could do things that private developers are not able or willing to do. So let us all work together about affordable housing. And as I grew up in a household where my father and I both had to commute 35 miles, me to get to school and him to get to a job. I understand what so many people who live and who work but can't live in Kirkland go through. It is a serious and expensive thing to have to deal with. All right. Thanks to a Trailways bus, I got to college. Second issue, just very briefly, also the issue of the Puget Sound Energy Direct Green Program. What I think I know about that, it seems like a very positive, economically wise thing to do, as well as ecologically. I'm here tonight to listen to your discussion of that and to learn where we're going with it. I'm very interested in that and want to encourage the council to move us forward in whatever we can do to make affordable, wise decisions about energy. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Kalpita Kothari.
Good evening, Mayor Wallen and City Council members. My name is Kalpita Kothari. I've been a resident of Kirkland since 2008. I'm here on behalf of Indivisible Kirkland Kenmore. My colleagues are sitting right here. I'm here to read a statement that has three requests to the council. A couple of weeks ago, Kirkland Police Chief Harris had a very positive meeting with our community about the ACLU's model local law enforcement policies. It was a productive meeting, and we thank Chief Harris and her department for their time and candor. Our requests to the council are in relation to issues that were raised at that meeting and that are of particular interest to our community. Firstly, we'd like to request that the City Council perform periodic reviews with community input of the visitation procedures at the Kirkland Jail and updates to the inmate handbook. Our goal is to ensure that inmates understand that it is their choice to speak with ICE or CBP agents who may show up at the jail and ask to speak with them. We also have concerns with how religious or faith-based needs, such as dietary restrictions, are tracked at the jail. We want to ensure that such sensitive information cannot be inadvertently shared with federal immigration officers. Secondly, we'd like to request that the City Council perform periodic reviews of officer training to ensure that officers have the best chance of telling the difference between when they have a judicial warrant and when they do not. This is in reaction to Chief Harris's comment at the meeting that it is easy for officers to think they have a judicial warrant when they run someone's name because the information returned to them looks similar in both cases. Lastly, we would like to request a review by the Kirkland City Attorney of the immigration guidance for local government that was recently released by Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson. This guidance is for local agencies such as libraries, law enforcement, hospitals, and schools, and answers questions about changes to immigration laws and the discretion that our agencies have regarding participation in federal immigration enforcement. This guidance can help us keep the commitment that we've made to our community as part of Kirkland Ordinance 4558 related to Kirkland being a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have reached the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Yes, sir. Please come forward. You could state your name for the record, please.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and representatives of the council. My name is Andrew Klein. I'm a resident of Kirkland. I've lived here not too long, only about 10 months. My family and I actually moved here because we loved the sense of community that we actually found when we were looking for homes in the area. I'm here to speak this evening on behalf of myself and the neighbors of what is the 113th Place Northeast community. It's the subdivision of Copperwood, which is off 116th in Juanita. Very recently, back in February, the house that is actually bordering my property was purchased by a new owner who lives in the city of Redmond. The house was converted into a full-time Airbnb. The house rents out to new guests every day, and every day we have 12 to 15 people coming through the home. It's a three-bedroom home. He's renting it as a five-bedroom hotel, essentially. Since our property lines share, our driveways also share. They're kind of shaped like a letter Y. They touch the street at the top of the Y, and they spread out to two separate driveways. The bottom of the letter Y is mostly on my property. Now, what we've had through this increase in traffic is a need to call the police on a semi-regular basis to deal with people blocking driveways, people who are just unfamiliar with the area trespassing onto our property. I spent an afternoon gardening and found that people were actually looking into our garage while I left my garage door open. My wife, who drives a black car, I'll admit this is kind of a hilarious story, they actually thought that she was the Uber arriving to come mm-hmm. pick them up. And what had happened was my two-year-old daughter, who was in the car, we had some strangers trying to open the doors of the car and get in while she was backing down her own driveway. Now, I've spoken with code enforcement, and there are all these minor nuisances like trash left by these neighbors that blows onto my property that none of it's really enforceable by existing law. There are some common sense laws that I think other cities have considered, such as limiting short-term rentals to 90-day periods where you must be a resident of the home, you can rent it out for 90 days a year, And I'll be honest, I'm a techie person. I'm wearing my hoodie tonight, which I think is evidence of that. I've used Airbnb in the past, and I've actually rented out from people who do that sort of thing. They might go on vacation themselves, bring in a new guest for 1 or 2 days. And I'm actually fine with that business model, and I think growth businesses like that are really important for industries. But I also think, again, being affordable housing week, I think it's really important to consider that we have laws on the books for single-family residency houses, specifically laws that indicate that no more than 5 unrelated residents might stay in a home. And we found that a lot of these laws are right in our face, being skirted by some of these loopholes. I'm here to request tonight, as I'm running out of time, that you as the council explore what can be done about these sort of situations, because we found this a nuisance that we're a neighborhood of 9 children that are under the age of 7, and we just don't want to have to live with this for the rest of our lives. Thank you, council members, for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank you, sir. So typically we don't applaud after our speakers. Sorry about that. But I'm wondering if the council, at the end of items from the audience, yeah, maybe we'll take up which some action items here. But I did think there was another gentleman who wanted to speak with us. Please come forward, sir, and state your name for the record, if you would.
My name is Ron Snell. I'm a resident of the city of Kirkland. What I'd like to speak to today briefly is about the PSC's Direct Green program that you're considering today. I want to speak on behalf of that. From everything that I've learned about that program, it's a highly innovative program. It's getting a lot of recognition nationally as a new style of green energy that utilities can offer customers. It's ideally designed for mid-size companies and public entities such as the Kirkland City Council for green energy. It's also helping PSE dramatically increase their renewable portfolio with 130 megawatts of additional power. So that is quite important. A number of cities have already signed on to this, as well as King County and Sound Transit, I believe Bellevue and Mercer Island. One of its characteristics that's also impressive is that it caps, as I understand it, potential increases. And if any of us have learned anything over the last 10 years, fossil fuel prices are highly unpredictable. And if you get an opportunity to cap prices, this is something not to be missed. So it's also, I think, going to help the city meet its greenhouse gas emission goals for 2020. So I encourage the city to support this program and sign on. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Yes, sir. Please come forward. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
Sure. Hi, I'm Kambiz Rahimi. I'm a resident of Kirkland as of 2010. Prior to that, I lived in Bellevue for 20 years. I'm an engineer by training, and I work for Microsoft. I'm here to second everything Ron said. That's why I'm here. To give a professional opinion on that, I've been studying the issue. It seems to make a lot of sense. It has the potential of saving the city some money over the next 10 years. And at worst case, it seems like probability-wise, it would at worst be not a huge financial loss. So the financial impact is pretty contained. But it would serve the purpose of, you know, reducing our greenhouse emissions. And also, it helps keep jobs in Washington, because the plant, the wind plant will be built in Washington instead of in Montana or some other state. So that's another positive impact that hasn't been discussed. I'll just stop there. I just wanted to express my support for that plan.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? All right, then I'll declare this items from the audience period closed, and I'm wondering if my colleagues would... Yes, sir.
I was wondering if we might have Ms. Qatari's list.
Yeah.
You were speaking faster than I could write. So if you got that, I'd love to get it from you. Thank you.
And you could turn it into our city attorney or city manager over here. That was one of the items on the list. I know we're bringing up Green Direct a little bit later, mm-hmm. downtown parking a little bit later, marina expansions on the list, and then I'm wondering about the Airbnb issue. Mr. Arnold.
Madam Mayor, on Ms. Qatari's list, I fortunately typed maybe a little faster than Mr. Asher, so I did get some notes on this. Are we making referrals to committee at this
That's
point?
That's what I'm wondering if we want to do. Okay. Yes, it sounds
so,
like.
So I would like to, there were four things: periodic reviews with community input of the inmate handbook, tracking of religious and faith-based needs in our jail, periodic city council reviews of officer training materials on judicial versus administrative warrant, and a review by the city attorney of the immigration guidance policies from Attorney General Ferguson. I would move that the first three be referred to the Public Safety Committee and we get a staff report on the fourth.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by, I was thinking some of this may already be in the works, but yes, it was moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Nixon, to send three of the items on the list to the Public Safety Committee and the fourth to the staff to give us a report. And is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? Thank you very much. We appreciate your feedback. Thank you. We make things happen in Kirkland. All right, Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, I think the one you haven't mentioned yet is the Airbnb regulation issue. And this has been the subject of some discussion in the Tourism Committee already, at least with regard to whether Airbnb operations pay lodging tax. But I don't think the Tourism Development Committee is the right place to discuss this. I think it should probably go to Planning and Economic Development. I, for one, have heard similar complaints from a number of other folks. I think it's very hard to make the case that a non-owner-occupied Airbnb operation is a residential use. And I think any non-owner-occupied rental for less than 30 days should be considered a hotel use. So, but I think we should refer it to the committee, and I will make a motion to that effect.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to refer the matter of Airbnb-type uses in residential areas to the Planning and Economic Development Committee. Is there any discussion? Well, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? Thank you very much. We'll refer that to our committee, and our committee minutes are made public, so our discussion will be published on our website. And
the meetings are open to the public now, too.
The meetings are open to the public as well, yes. Yeah. You can attend and track our progress, and you can certainly email any of us, and we'll be happy to provide you with updates. All right. Thank you very much. That was a productive items from the audience period tonight. The next item on our agenda, it's item 8. It's the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'd ask Deputy Mayor Arnold, who serves on the Finance and Administration Committee, to present the audit of accounts.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We had payroll in the amount of $3,080,683.10 and bills in the amount of $2,247,898.31.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
It was moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to approve the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Thank you very much. We do need a roll call vote because Ms. Marcioni is participating remotely. I had trouble with my words there for a moment. So if we could have a roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon.
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal.
Yes.
Councilmember Asher.
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet.
Yes.
Councilmember Marcioni. Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallach?
Yes. Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved.
Do you want to reflect how she voted?
I could hear her. I don't know if the audience could. She said
I
yes.
I barely heard her.
Yeah. So the next item on our agenda is under unfinished business. It's item 10A, the state legislative update number 9. City Manager.
Okay, City Manager. We have a very brief report. The Chair was kind enough to give Laurie McKay the night off since not much has happened in the legislature during their special session to report. But we do have one item for you, which is a potential letter that we're asking Council to approve for the Mayor to sign, which is a letter to our delegation. The one that you have in front of you is drafted to Senator Rossi, but we would send a similar letter to all 9 members of the Kirkland delegation. And this is highlighting our opinions about the budgets that are currently in discussion between the House and the Senate. So I'm happy to answer any questions, or I'm sure the legislative committee members are as well.
Councilmember Asher.
The letter is self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. It's positions we've taken before and some items that have emerged as the budgets have been revealed. So I recommend that we play in this game. with the state budget, because it's got some really important implications.
Well done.
Do we need a motion, do you think?
Yes. I would move that we send letters to each of our members of our three legislative districts. The letter similar to the one that you see here addressed to Senator Rossi, expressing Kirkland's suggestions and ideas on the state budget.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Pascal. We move that we send a letter to our state representatives about our suggestions and ideas for the budget.
State representatives and senators.
And senators.
Yes.
Is there any discussion? Well, will all those in favor please say aye.
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 And those opposed say no? Oh, we need a roll call vote.
Oh, that's right.
All right. Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. That authorization is approved.
Most efficient legislative update.
That's all we have.
Discussion on the legislative process. Mr. Nixon was down today attending the bill signing. Would you like to report on that now, sir?
Sure. Yeah, I did have the opportunity to attend the bill signing for House Bills 1594 and 1595, as I was down there anyway for the Sunshine Committee meeting. And it went smoothly. It was well attended. There were probably 30 people in the room with the governor. And the governor did raise an issue with 1594, which actually other people have raised as well, which is that it imposes some new requirements on state and local governments, like the reporting requirements for accountability to the Joint Legislative Audit Review Committee, but does not provide any funding for the staff work necessary to do that. And so the governor asked the legislators who were present, and there were quite a few of them, to please make sure that that gets funded in the budget. I'm a little skeptical that that will happen, but he didn't make that comment. but otherwise, it was a good day to see that that has been completed.
Thank you very much.
And I had a bill signing last week of the Metropolitan Park District bill that we had essentially ramrodded from Kirkland. Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Sweet and I were attending the bill signing with Senator Palumbo and Representative Clova, who did wonderful work in driving this bill through and provides us with some options for actually limiting tax authority of a metropolitan park district if we were to choose that in the future. So another great success for us, given our engagement in Olympia.
Cool.
Thank you. All right, then let's move on. It's item 10B, Resolution 5255, approving changes to downtown parking. City Manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm wondering if we could actually move to item 10C. We're moving a little faster than we thought, so our staff person is not quite here yet.
I'm sorry, sir. That's okay.
That fits resist. Right with my request today of never, ever hearing another thing about downtown parking.
All right, let's move on to item 10C. It's the Human Services Commission Interview Selection Committee Recommendation. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as you know, by your processes, your subcommittee makes a recommendation for folks to interview. The City Council can confirm that, or they can make changes, additions, or subtractions. So the committee members are here and can speak to the choices they made if you have any questions, but we're looking for a motion to approve the recommendations of the committee or to make additions or changes to the recommendations of the committee.
I'd move we accept the recommendations of the ad hoc committee.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve the recommendations of the ad hoc committee for the Human Services Commission interviews. Is there any discussion? Thank you, Ms. Sweet.
Yeah, I just want to assure people that in setting up a new commission, we spent a lot of time reviewing the, was it 27? 30. We had 30 applications, and we basically broke them. The applications were representative of an amazing level of skill in terms of the applicant pool. So it was really tough. We had a lot of good choices to make from. And what we tried to do is we tried to break it up, make sure that we got both a sort of an age categories and ethnicities, and we really wanted it to look like a commission that was representative of all of Kirkland. So we spent time purposefully doing that. It was a good process. Anybody who didn't make it to the top tier, it's not because you weren't an excellent candidate. It's because that's what we tried to do. It was a good process.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right, the question is on the motion to approve the recommendations of the ad hoc committee. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold. Could we have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. That motion is approved. Do you want to move on now to 10B or skip down to 10B?
We can come back to 10, yes, 10B. Thank you.
Now we're ready to go to 10B.
We're ready to go to 10B.
Are you sure?
Yes. I am. Thank you.
All right. The next item on our agenda is item 10B. It's resolution 5255 approving changes to downtown parking. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Here to present
you with the background on this resolution is our transportation planning manager, Joel Funt. And we're looking for action tonight from the council.
Good evening, Joel.
Good evening. Sorry, I was running a little late.
Nice to see you.
Mm-hmm. Are we on the right page?
Mm-hmm. It's a sneak peek of what's up next.
I think it's just by the Firefox one. Oh, there it is.
So, good evening. I'm here to give a brief presentation on some changes that we're proposing to downtown parking. First of all, I just wanted to give a brief little background on what's been going on with parking updates and improvements in the last couple of years. Staff has been working on a number of improvements that were based on guidance provided by council 2 years ago. Actually, it was in May of 2015. Those improvements really focused on a couple of things. One, we wanted to focus on trying to increase supply of parking in downtown. And the other one was more operational improvements, making it more attractive, easier to use, those types of things. And so what those included is installing some parking wayfinding signage around downtown, garage improvements, including new striping, new lighting, some new signage within the library garage, providing some limiting parking on a portion of Market Street where we were having a lot of all-day parking, and that Market Street parking is really useful for certain downtown businesses. Implementing all-day paid parking in the Lake and Central lot, as well as employee parking permits on Lake Avenue West to provide additional downtown employee parking. We also did some improvements to the parking signage at City Hall to clarify how the parking here can be used. And then more recently, we've implemented Pay by Phone, which is an app that allows folks to use their mobile device to pay for parking in our paid lots. And then we've also implemented security patrols in our garage, in the library garage. So tonight, focusing on a couple of additional things that we're recommending. One of those is implementing all-day parking in the Lakeshore parking lot. And then the other one is talking a little bit about the new parking lot just here near City Hall on 3rd Avenue between 1st Street and 2nd Street. And then also looking at reconciling the downtown employee parking restrictions. We have some conflicts between city policy and the Kirkland Municipal Code. I'm not going to be going into that tonight, but that's something that we'll be bringing back to council at a future meeting. So on the Lakeshore parking lot, just to kind of refresh on what our current restrictions are there, and I have to read it because it's it's free parking with a 3-hour limit between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. and then pay parking with a 4-hour limit between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. except on Sundays and holidays. So that's how it works today, and it's kind of a mouthful. What we're proposing is to change that, and what this results in is basically paid parking 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Except for Sundays and holidays. So it's a much easier, kind of clear, and that's also consistent with how we do paid parking in the Lake and Central lot as well for the last while. So what we're proposing is for an implementation schedule is that as of here in May, we would be posting large notice signs in the existing lot that would tell people that there's a change coming in the lot. We would also be notifying businesses in the area of the impending change. We would then install the new signage on June 1st, and during the first couple weeks of June, we would be issuing warnings, letting people know that there has been a change, and then we would begin enforcement on June 16th. And so really, the benefits of this are the encouraging increased parking turnover, and then also we do get a lot of, not a lot, but we get people who are confused or didn't know when it's going to be paid and when, you know, how long they can stay and those kinds of things, and some frustration around that. And so the simplification should help with that as well. The parking lot on 3rd Avenue, the rules that we're recommending for that are that it would be for weekday employee parking with a permit displayed, and that would be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the 84 new parking stalls would be available for those employees during the week, and then it would be available for public parking in the evening and on weekends. The project is currently scheduled to be complete on June 21st. That is dependent on spring coming to the Northwest at some point here. And so with that, I'll take any questions.
Excellent. Mr. Asher.
Thank you. How will we know if we achieve our objective in the let's take the parking lot down next to the marina? How will we know that we achieve our objective or not? And when will we measure that?
So at this point, we have not... we don't have a program in place that regularly monitors parking turnover, but that is certainly something that we could look at in the future. We have done parking studies at a couple times in the past, and that would be something that we would need to look at again in the future. We don't have an ongoing program that monitors that.
I will say in addition to creating a formal program, we got pretty immediate informal feedback from the merchants when we went all day paid in the Lake and Central lot, and you can sort of see it as you drive by. Are you creating that 15% vacancy that is roughly your target when you go to paid parking? Is there a space when you drive by? And in the Lake and Central lot, we found spaces. So, you know, I think we're going to get a lot of pretty quick feedback from the merchants down there as to whether or not the spaces are still full or whether there is enough turnover. But we'll take that and turn it into a more formal program as well.
And second question for the lot yet to be named, next to City Hall, does evening begin at 5 p.m.? It says evenings and weekends.
Yes.
So by definition, it begins at 5 p.m.?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Sweet.
I just want to take a shot at responding to Dave's question also about when we went to pay in the Lake and Central lot, the Lakeshore lot immediately filled up. So there's not a parking place in the Lakeshore lot because that's where employees are parking and moving their cars throughout the day. So we're anticipating it will have a pretty dramatic effect right away. One of the concerns that I do have, though, is I have heard a lot of folks in the downtown community express concern about, they've got a part-time job, they're an employee. When they are an employee, they have a sticker in their car, they park in the lot, or they park in the library lot. If they come down later on in the afternoon to go shopping, to do anything else, they will get a ticket at some point if they park in the lot, because it's not, because they're assumed to be working if they drive, if they go back to Kirkland. It's one of the reasons why I pay parking, is because I got enough tickets that it made more financial sense. But I think that's a major concern that we're going to hear from folks. So if we want these 84 spaces to be used, people have to get the stickers in their cars for those plus the ones at the library. And how many do we have at the library, Joel?
Generally, the bottom floor of the library is I'm not sure exactly how many stalls.
Anyway, so those are getting filled up. We've got to figure out some kind of a way for somebody to be an employee and be able to go downtown. We used to have one, if you'll remember the old program, they had day off stickers. So you could put a day off sticker in your car if you were down there when you weren't working and when you were just hanging out, going to whatever. And that's going to be a major issue. So we're going to need to think about that, I think. And that's it, because the permits are stickers, right? So they're on the car all the time.
Correct.
That's definitely something we could evaluate when we're looking at the reconciliation between the policy and the KMC, because that deals with parking on the street as well. So we can make sure we talk about that.
Okay, I have Mr. Pascal and Mr. Arnold.
Yes, so I really like how this has been part of a plan that we've kind of placed, and now we're kind of taking action on. We've implemented these other things before this, and now we're likely to do something here with this lot. I wanted to ask a question just about a couple things, just out of curiosity. With the mobile pay, what's the percent of folks that use that? Like, for all the revenue it comes in, is it 50% that gets generated through that, or do you know?
So I don't recall the exact percentage. It's less than 50%. But we implemented it late last year, it has continued to be, it's a growth element. So,
right.
It started out in single digits and that type of thing, but it is growing. More people are choosing to pay by phone, and it's nice because we use the same vendor as City of Seattle uses. So if you have pay by phone on your phone, you can use it in downtown Kirkland, and if you happen to be in Seattle.
Thank you. And then one of the other items that I've been thinking about for some time, and I know it's down the road, but it's a dynamic parking signage. And I know that was part of this study, and I think it was kind of pushed off because of concerns about costs and implementation and stuff. But that's something that I'd be interested in seeing how we, look at that again to see when, if it makes more sense now that we have this other lot coming on and with Kirkland Urban going in, that, the dynamic parking signage can be used not just for public, but for large garages like Kirkland Urban. And so are we actively making sure that we can do that since it's under construction? And it just seems like it's an opportunity here that we should take advantage of here in the next few years. So,
I think we certainly see that we've completed kind of a two-year program, and had set out a program that we wanted to implement. We've been successfully done that, and there's still more work to be done, and we would foresee doing something similar and evaluating ideas like that and other things to see how we can continue to, you know, get the most out of our supply of parking and manage it.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
I really appreciate, Joel, what you had in the first slide that listed everything that, that we've done, not just because it's a big list, but I think all these things work together. And as we talk about the policies next month, in addition to providing the opportunity with the improvements in the library garage, the security patrols in the library garage, and the creation of the south of City Hall lot to make a place for employees to park, some sort of enforcement is going to be important. But I think we'll be able to have some options with move to evade to be able to say, as long as someone's not evading, maybe we can find a way for an employee to come and park closer on their off days. So I do think it's going to be an important piece, having that kind of employee enforcement, but I think there's solutions that we can look at.
So I have a couple of comments and then a question. So first of all, I want to thank you for the memo. If you all have not read this memo on downtown parking, it is outstanding because it shows years and years and years of work, a huge problem statement. We don't have enough parking. And then here's a plan, and then here's the execution of the plan, and now we're coming to completion. And we do have a scarce resource. So when you have a scarce resource, you have to manage it very carefully. You have to balance interests, and hopefully you do a good job with those things, and then you also build supply. And we've done all of those things. Everyone's asking really serious questions where I feel like we should be popping champagne because this is a big deal. I really appreciate the chamber being here and sticking with us and helping us work through these difficult issues because we're going to change parking in downtown. Some people are going to think it's fantastic and some people are going to be really mad. But at least we're doing something, right? We're going to try it. And then as Mr. Asher says, we're going to measure it and find out if we've been successful. And if we're not, we're going to change it again. I do think we've given our employees a lot more options. They're going to have a lot more places to park. And even if it's their day off, they're going to have some dedicated spaces that are there for them to park, Lake Ave West and our new yet-to-be-named parking lot, which I am so excited about. And this pay-by-phone thing, I am not very technical, but it is awesome because I don't mind paying a dollar. What I do hate is getting out of my car, going to the thing, trying to get the thing, and then it's raining, and then I go back to my car, stick the thing on. That process, where if it, my phone, it's just, and Jay has been a real advocate for this thing, and I'm a believer. You just punch in the number of the lot, and then it's a dollar. Who cares? It's a dollar. And then it tells me, oh, by the way, you know, your dollar's about to run out. Do you want to add another dollar? I mean, it's fantastic. Everyone should use it. So that's my comment. So thank you very much, Joel. Beautiful work, you and all your team and everybody for all the 8 years I've been on the council for working on downtown parking because it's a big deal and we're doing something about it. I'm really proud of it. The question part, though, is lighting. So I do foresee myself parking there and then walking down. And I know I've asked this question before, but can we look at making sure that that is lit to where people feel comfortable? It's not a very far walk to from here to downtown, but at night, if we want people to use it and support our businesses, I think lighting would be important. And then I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the resolution. Yes, sir.
It's not just the lot. The lot has probably got enough lighting. It's the walk from the lot.
Exactly.
Is what we have to monitor.
I agree. That's my concern exactly.
And we can say, certainly take a look
at
that.
So maybe you could circle back and let us know about that.
Yeah.
Okay, I wonder if there is a motion to approve resolution 5255.
I certainly would like to. I move resolution R5255. Oops.
Yeah,
it's on. Approving changes to downtown parking.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold, to approve Resolution 5255 approving changes to downtown parking. Is there any further discussion? Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Heartily, yes. Thank you very much. Resolution 5255 is approved. Do you want to take a break before we go into fire station, or do you want to proceed?
Let's go to fire station.
Fire station. Next item on our agenda, thank you, Joel, is item 10D. It's the fire station project update. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. As you know, we have been spending many years looking for a new station location for our new fire station 24, and we've been working to acquire what we call the Rite Aid site, which is where the current Rite Aid is by the Goodwill up at the corner of 100th and 132nd. And at the same time, we've been going through condemnation proceedings to acquire that site. We've also been in negotiations, discussions with Rite Aid about possible co-location. And I did have an opportunity to speak to some of the representatives of Rite Aid on Monday. And they are still very interested in co-location, even though we have provided them a series of sort of must-haves from the city's perspective. And so they have said that none of those must-haves are fatal to their interests. And we're now at a point where we need direction from the council because we can't really go much further without spending quite a bit of money. So here to provide you some background on that and tee up the decision is our Deputy City Manager, Marilyn Beard.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. What I'm not going to do is recount the whole history that was recounted in the memo, but what I will do is start with our where we are right now, a little bit about the options, the pros and cons, and then some time for discussion and council direction. So we've been exchanging concept drawings with Rite Aid for potential co-location since February. I think we've been going back and forth with them on drawings. And in going back and forth, we finally provided them a list of our requirements, what was very important to the city. They had responded.
That's right. At the time of the creation of the memo, we had not talked to them, but I was able to speak to them yesterday at the end of the day.
And so they have responded. Mm-hmm. And again, none of our requirements were a showstopper, but everything is going to be in the details that we'd have to get from a design, a more detailed design and analysis about how this would work. So the condemnation is proceeding. The city filed a motion on public use and necessity, I believe, last week. The Rite Aid response is due May 30th, and then our hearing is scheduled for June 8th. In terms of the co-location consideration, some of the things, if we did agree to co-locate with Rite Aid, it would prevent the dislocation of a local business. We would retain the sales tax from that business. And it's possible that it would resolve the site acquisition more quickly, depends on how this design goes. On the con side, it does constrain the fire station design, limits future public uses, and then potentially limits future expansion on that site to meet growing service demands that result from increased density in the area. A condemnation would provide greater flexibility for station design, retain the capacity for future fire service needs, allow the station enhancements we've talked about, a training area, maybe a community room, potentially other public uses of that property. It also maintains full control of the site so that we have it for our needs now and in the future. And again, just as sort of the flip side of the other, so that it does displace a retail outlet, reduces sales tax revenue, and results of loss of a community business. So we're asking for whether, one, if you need additional information, and if so, what would that be? And if you can provide direction tonight about whether to continue seeking a co-location solution with Rite Aid or to just proceed with condemnation of the entire site.
Mr. Asher.
Regardless of scenario, are we planning on making sure we have accommodations for the traffic flow to the rear of the Goodwill building?
That would, right, one of the considerations we haven't done yet is for this project, for co-location, is we haven't involved Goodwill, and they definitely would need to be involved either in this project or even if Rite Aid wasn't going to be there because of the way that the circulation on the property occurs right now. And so we would need to sit down with them and design something that would work for everybody.
Okay, so as long as we're going to ensure that we've got some accommodation for their operations, I would suggest that we not entertain the co-location any further. And if you'd like a motion to that effect,
yes,
I can. I would move to set aside efforts to co-locate on the Wall property site with Rite Aid and continue condemnation proceedings for the entire parcel for public use.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Pascal, to set aside efforts to co-locate on the site with Rite Aid and continue condemnation proceedings. Is there any discussion? Yes, please, Mr. Arnold and Ms. Sweet.
So as we've had some of these discussions, I have repeatedly asked the question about what's the impact on neighborhood business. This is a neighborhood business center. And part of my previous discussions on this have talked about the importance of preserving those services for the neighborhood. As we've looked more about the needs of this fire station, the challenges in locating any kind of facility, and the future growth that we're needing to prepare for, that really has tipped the scales for me to say that we really need to condemn the entire site to preserve our flexibility to provide public safety service. So I am in support of the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet and then maybe Ms. Marcioni. I think I hear her.
What he said, basically, mm-hmm. My greatest concern is not because that is not a really busy Rite Aid. And the pharmaceutical business that they do will be transferable very locally, so I'm not as concerned about the loss of revenue. In terms of the neighborhood services, I think we have additional opportunity in the redevelopment of that whole area. Does it have a name? Is it just the North Juanita? Okay. Anyway, so I fully support the motion.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Pascal?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I've been thinking about this, too, for quite some time. And anytime you're trying to co-locate and you don't have all the details worked out, it basically what we're doing is we're increasing the scope. The scope of this effort becomes quite large, and there's a lot of, you know, possibilities that are undefined. And when you do that, costs increase, it takes longer, and you might very well get to the same to the same end solution. And the other thing I've learned just being on the Planning Commission and seeing things is that, commercial businesses and specific companies don't always last for a long time, even though that we would like them to and have them be successful. I think when you're building a building that's sharing a wall with a commercial business, but the building is a vital public safety building, that presents some concerns for me. So I'm in support of this motion.
Thank you. Ms. Marcioni? How about Mr. Nixon? And Ms. Marcioni can interrupt me at any time. Please, sir.
Sure. We've also heard a number of concerns from the parents and staff at Juanita Elementary. And I believe that by not co-locating, we will have a lot more flexibility to accommodate those concerns in terms of the route that children walk, the potential for putting in an underpass under 132nd Street so that people don't even have to use that crosswalk there. And so I support the condemnation of the entire site as well.
Thank you.
Not that we're going to do an underpass.
Not that we're going to, but it gives us the flexibility to do that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I've also had the same concerns that Deputy Mayor Arnold has, in that I hate to give up commercial spaces and services for our community, but we have grown, our population's growing. We have Kirkland Urban, we have Totem, the village at Totem Lake coming on, and we have got to beef up our fire service. It's just absolutely essential. So I have also become convinced that we need to have that whole site for public use. So it was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Pascal to set aside efforts to co-locate on the site with Rite Aid and to continue condemnation proceedings. Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni? Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. That motion is approved. The next item on our agenda is under new business. It's Puget Sound Energy's Green Direct Program. City Manager.
Okay. While we switch deputy city managers, we'll be taking up the issue. So we had an opportunity to look at this in the Finance Administration Committee. It's a unique opportunity to choose whether or not to enter into the PSE Green Direct Program. So there was a lot of background in the memo, but here to walk you through the choice and then seek further direction from the council is Tracy Dunlap, our Deputy City Manager.
Good evening. You've already heard a bit about this evening, and so I will just give you a few brief highlights from the memo and see if you have additional questions. The few highlights of the Puget Sound Energy Green Direct Program is that it's a pretty unique opportunity that allows government and commercial participants to directly invest in a specific green energy project. The reason I say it's unique is that, based on PSE's feedback, it's really one of the only opportunities of its type that's been approved in the country. And the project itself is a new wind facility in southwest Washington and beyond Weyerhaeuser property between Thurston and Lewis counties. And the program itself offers you the ability to lock in the cost of the power portion of your bill for either 10 or 20 years. And so Puget Sound Energy provided an analysis worksheet that we were able to look at, and that analysis assumed that we would use this program if we were to opt for it for all eligible facilities, which is most of the city's facilities. There are a few rentals that are residential in nature, so wouldn't be eligible. As one of the speakers earlier said, Bellevue, King County, Mercer Island, and others have enrolled. There was a first round of enrollment, and now there's a second round going on, which opened up May 1st. And so as Puget Sound Energy administers the program, once they have sold all of the power they expect to be generated by the facilities, they'll close enrollment. And so that's one reason we're bringing it to you now, is that the enrollment of the next phase is open at the moment. The tables on this slide just summarizes the scenarios that we looked at in the sensitivity analysis. The base scenario that Puget Sound Energy provided assumed a 3% annual inflation rate in the electricity costs outside the program, a renewable energy credit price of $1, and their baseline analysis assumed a savings of $85,000 over the 10-year period, which is about 1.4%. Anything in electricity inflation that's higher than 3% only makes that number better. So we didn't run a lot of scenarios of it better, but what we did is we tried to look at the downside risk, and a break even, which would mean no additional savings or no additional costs, would be if electricity inflation fell from 3% to 2.4%. If in the somewhat unlikely event that there were no inflation in electricity costs, the net cost would be $310,000 over the 10-year period. So relatively speaking, we have about $6 million in energy costs that we're comparing to here. And then just to kind of round out the sensitivity analysis, if the renewable energy credit pricing went to zero, it would cut the savings in half. And so I think from a financial standpoint, there is some likely benefit. It's relatively small, but this is as much an environmental decision as it is an economic decision. But the risk, the reward is that you lock in the price. The risk is that regular energy prices don't grow at the same rate as they've grown in the past. So the impacts of if Kirkland were to choose to participate today, in part as part of our climate action plan, but also in part because of our LEED certifications of our buildings, we currently purchase a little less than half of our overall power from PSE's Green Power Program, which is where you pay a premium for to purchase power from a block of all of their resources. That costs us right now between $12,000 and $15,000 a year. And the assumption on this Green Direct program is that it would replace that purchase. So we would save that particular cost as well as locking in the power price. What we're saving today from that purchase is about just under 1.5 million pounds a year of carbon emissions. Under the Green Direct program, if we purchased it for all our eligible uses, the reduction is 3.25 million pounds, so that's an improvement in the annual reduction of carbon emissions of 1.8 million pounds. And so, again, taking that into consideration, when you think that we're saving on the green power side, that's an additional hedge against the sensitivity or the risk of locking in the power price, and in fact, regular power prices go down. So we'll actually see some savings in the short run if we were to opt for the program. One consideration in the contract is that if the agreement is terminated early, the incremental cost of the Green Direct power over the regular cost of power would still be due over the remaining term of the contract. I couldn't think of a circumstance where you might opt to do that in that there's not a substantial savings in either event. But that is one of the concerns with the contract, but it's also something that, again, the relative risk is not a very large dollar amount. So three potential questions in terms of the next steps. One is, do you need additional information prior to making a decision on Green Direct? There were some questions earlier that I think we were able to address, but if there are other questions that have come up, this would be a good time to identify them. If the council decided that no action was necessary, this is just an informational presentation. If the council chooses to proceed, what we would do is bring back a resolution to authorize the city manager to enter into the agreement that's required. And the only final point that I would make is that time is somewhat of the essence, again, because they are actively out marketing it, and once they sell all of the shares in this particular project, then you'd have to wait for a future project if you wanted to opt for it at that point.
Thank you. We have Mr. Nixon and Mr. Asher.
Thank you. So in general, I'm not particularly interested in doing this if it's just for the purpose of feeling good about being more green than we are already, because we're already buying green power credits. I would be very interested in doing this if we think we can actually save taxpayer money going forward, such as by reducing our exposure to future electricity rate increases. But we recognize that by doing this, we would be placing a bet with the people's money that the rates under our current program would go up faster than they would under the locked-in future rates. And but that's not any different than any other bet that we place locking in a price on a resource that will be used in the future, whether it's water or gas or leases on buildings or whatever it might be. We make those kind of bets all the time. So my question for you is, if we go back to the sensitivity analysis slide that you had, do you have an educated guess, a degree of confidence as to which of these scenarios is most likely?
In PSE's slide presentation, which was an attachment to the memo, they showed the last 10 years of history, and 3% is a fairly reasonable assumption. It goes up, it goes up less, it goes up more, depending on what's going on with prices. What they did provide is kind of a bull market, bear market look at things, and it depends on how you want to gamble in terms of the bull and bear market. But one of the big factors is natural gas. Natural gas prices have been low and continue to be low. If that gas is sold outside the U.S. market, then it'll tend to keep electricity prices high. If the gas was actually infused into the U.S. market, it could have an effect, but electricity prices haven't gone down, at least in that 10-year period. And so that was why we chose the 0% as sort of a, even if it stayed level, the net cost isn't dramatic over a 10-year period. And so I certainly think PSE, when they presented this to the Finance and Administration Committee, was more on the side of power prices are likely to do better or have a higher degree of inflation or something like that than the 3%. 3% is what they picked is what they thought a 10-year reasonable average would be. And so I think generally speaking, they'd say they think the odds are that it's more likely to increase by more than that than substantially less than that.
And if you look at our mix of power sources in this region, it's overwhelmingly hydro, and the price doesn't vary a whole lot on hydro. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next we have Mr. Asher, then Mr. Arnold.
Thank you. If we look at the impacts of PSE's non-hydro investments, that on its face should cause us to want to participate in this program. And as a full disclosure, I already participate in the Green Direct program personally and hadn't thought of until I read the memo and checked. And I'm also paying for the green power, too, so I've got to check out the personal economics of that. Those two programs. It would be worthwhile, I think, for us to inquire what are the personal and individual abilities to participate in a this project or a future project. I'm assuming this project will be fully subscribed fairly quickly. But in a future project, is that a further possibility?
We did clarify with them that this particular project is only available to commercial and government customers, and because I think they have to qualify it specifically with the federal regulatory agencies. And so right now, I believe the only widely available option on the residential side is the green power program, which you mentioned.
Well, you can participate individually in the green direct, but it's not a hedge mechanism.
On the price side.
But it would be great to see future investments available as hedges for individuals, if we could see with that. And I fully support us participating in it, and whenever anyone gets ready, I have a motion prepared.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
I first learned about Green Direct in briefings by Puget Sound Energy and through the King County Cities Climate Collaboration, and I was excited to fulfill Kirkland's sustainability values and demonstrate progress towards our previously adopted climate goals. And I was intrigued by the opportunity not only to expand to 100% renewable energy, but also to provide something where this is investing in a new clean energy source. And this is Puget Sound Energy going beyond what's required in Initiative 933, where a portion of their portfolio has to be renewable. This because it's funded by these commercial and institutional uses, it's actually new clean green power, and I'm excited about that. But as we looked at it in the Finance Committee, the fact that we're actually saving, have the potential, and there's some reasonable assumptions, to save $85,000 over the life of the program and provide predictability in our budget with limited downside, this is a win-win-win. So I would actually like to jump in, Dave, and move that staff bring back a resolution authorizing the city manager to enroll Kirkland in the Green Direct program.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Asher. To direct our staff to bring back a resolution to authorize the city manager to enter into an agreement to participate in the Green Direct program. Is there any further discussion? Ms. Sweet.
It seems like it's green and guaranteed.
Green and guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I just want to add, can you hear me, Mayor?
Yep.
Yes, ma'am, we can hear you.
Okay, I just wanted to say that, like Mr. Asher, I am also enrolled in the program, so I fully support us going into it.
Cool.
Same here. Thank you. Ms. Anderson, the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. That motion is approved.
Good.
All right, so we have reached the end of our old business and new business, and we're on to council reports. Would you like to take a break, or would you like to make your reports? Oh, let's do our reports. All right, Mr. Nixon.
All right, a few things that happened in the last 2 weeks. That we had the Sound Cities Association networking dinner with the county council members on May 3rd, which was very interesting. Had a ribbon cutting at a new business on May 4th. May 6th was the Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee meeting. My notes for that were sent in email. And May 12th, we had the celebration of the first public art on the Cross Kirkland Corridor, The Spikes by Mary Lee Dix, which was very well attended. In terms of things that are coming up, I think everyone should be reminded that we have the State of the City address being made to the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods on May 22nd at the 7 p.m. here in the Peter Kirk Room. We have the dedication of a new a renaming of a park in the Kingsgate neighborhood, Bud Holman Park, which is on Saturday, June 3rd at 11 a.m. And then I wanted to remind you that I will miss the June 6th council meeting as I'll be traveling on business out of the country. And the time zones just don't work right to call in. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pascal.
Yeah, so last week I was on a speaking circuit, it felt like. Lots of going out and talking with the community, a lot of discussion about growth and what we're doing about it. And so had attended the Juanita neighborhood meeting on May 8th, lots of questions and concern. Next morning, May 9th, attended the Lakeview PTSA meeting, talking about the same thing, growth, and how that's affecting schools. And then on Thursday, May 11th, got to speak to the old timers. That was my first trip there. That was interesting. It was great. And then that evening, spoke with the St. John's Episcopal Church men's group. They're just outside downtown. Again, the same subject, growth. What are we doing about it? All of those. And then on Friday, I attended the Eastside Transportation Partnership meeting, where I think as a region for the Eastside, really looking at what our priorities are. And so there's some interesting discussion about kind of the role of that group and how we'd like to be more proactive as opposed to reactive, which sounds good to me. But I think there's a lot more discussion there. And I would like to circle back about the growth discussion on the calendar item. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe we can talk about that in calendar updates.
Absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Asher.
Not much going on as far as committee work, other than what you've heard about the legislative committee. The legislative committee will be initiating some meetings with legislators here in the not too distant future. Hopefully, to get a sort of an interim postmortem and to engage them potentially before the session is over, and that'll help us prepare for the next session along with them.
And just wanted to let you know Memorial Day is coming up, which means the Memorial Day Seven Hills of Kirkland and the carbo loading before the Seven Hills of Kirkland is on Saturday morning from 7 till noon at the Kiwanis Club. We'll put it on at the Peter Kirk Community Center. Tickets are $7, and there's lots of tickets available, and you can get tickets at the door. All of the proceeds go to Attain Housing for Affordable Housing here on the east side. So I can facilitate you getting tickets if you'd like to have one, or if your business would like to have one, or if the whole population would like to have. I can get you as many tickets as you want. And it's all the pancakes you can eat, and we have local community groups providing music from about 7:30 until noon. And you can sit there and eat pancakes the whole dang time and listen to music. So please come.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
Okay. King County Regional Water Quality meeting. We had another West Point update. Unfortunately, every time we talk about it, it doesn't look much. It's not getting better. The story is just getting a little bit worse. We also had some further discussion on the CSO review and just the enormous amount of monies that we're putting into that whole process of bringing them up to speed. Eastside Transportation Forum was an interesting gathering. I think it opened some old wounds, I think, for some of us who were there. But it's great that we're all involved in the same conversation. Mm-hmm. At the Emergency Management Advisory Council, we actually, with the help of our police chief on my text, she helped us make some final decisions with regard to our budgeting this year in terms of just how much money we were going to put in a regional account for rifle protection vests and tourniquet units, something that we actually provide for our own department and which most departments, I believe, should. And the elected certainly agreed with that. At the chamber luncheon, nobody else went this week, but you missed a presentation by two 15 and 16-year-old girls who started their own company. It's called the Magic Carrot Candle Company, doing all sustainable stuff. It was just the most amazing project, and they have formed a business, and they're hiring, and they're renting space, and they're manufacturing these candles, and they're selling them on Etsy, and they have these two little kids come out with a business plan that I wish half the businesses in Kirkland would have such a good product. Then last week at MISWAC, I sent you the minutes from that meeting this morning. And then the 4th of July. 4th of July, we have a funding gap this year. So, and the costs have gone up. Fireworks, my five-year contract with the fireworks company expired. So we got a $5,000 bump in our bill this year. So we're having an auction on June the 16th at the Eagles Club. A band has donated their time, and our objective is to bring in $14,000. So mark your calendars.
What time?
June 16th.
It'll be June 16th from 7. The auction will be from 7 to 9. The entertainment will be from 8 to 11.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
I have one item not previously mentioned. The Eastside Rail Corridor nonprofit group, the Eastside Greenways Alliance, met with me and the city manager and Kathy Brown on Monday talking about building a brand for the Eastside Rail Corridor. And this is parts of the whole rail corridor outside of the Cross-Kirkland Corridor. We've got a vision of connecting to as a transportation corridor throughout at the system. They have a throughout the region. They have a vision of bringing in some nonprofit and corporate and foundation money, looking at some models that have been done with the Atlanta Beltway or the High Line in New York, and What they want to talk about is saying, how do we brand this entire effort when you've got the cross-Corkman corridor, the Redmond Central Connector, and this rail corridor, which is much more than an abandoned rail corridor. And so they want to have some branding about saying, how do we have these multi-tiered brands that we can talk about and go raise money. They have they're putting together a proposal to consult with a branding expert to figure this out, and they are proposing that each of the owners and stakeholders of the rail corridor contribute to that. We'll be talking about this at the Eastside Rail Corridor Advisory Council in June, and I sent council some email on this. I'm wondering if we could have staff look at this and present some options at our next meeting, so I have something to take to the RAC meeting on June 6th.
Staff bring back options, okay?
Good idea.
Yep, thank you.
Okay, Kurt, do you have anything to add?
Well, just I want to add my thanks to Deputy Mayor Arnold, because the first drafts of the branding talked about a trail, and what a nice thing to brand a trail. And so Deputy Mayor Arnold reminded them that it's a multi-use transportation corridor, and it needed to also have transit in there. And so the final draft they came back with was much changed and much improved, and really does talk about the concept of a multi-use corridor. So that was very helpful. But, it's, I think, a noble goal, but it's going to be challenging to achieve. So I think doing a little bit more work on it and bringing it back to the council to look at it in more detail, I think, is appropriate.
And I would note the Eastside Rail Corridor Advisory Council has had a long-term vision for a multi-use trail, and we just want to make sure that the materials that the Greenway Alliance present are consistent with the adopted vision that has been made by all the owners.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that the Celebrate Kirkland July 4th t-shirt contest is open. So you can go to celebratekirkland.com and submit your entry. The theme is Liberty and Justice for All, Kirkland for All. So it's an inclusion theme. So please go and submit your, I believe that I will be honored to be one of the judges. It's a panel of judges.
It is a panel. And the fact of the matter is this is kind of a combined effort. Kathy, are you here? Kathy has been working with the Kirkland Downtown Association, which is sort of the official owner of the 4th of July, and we're trying to take this opportunity and this theme to build on our safe inclusionary proclamation, as well as on the Love of Kirkland work. So I'm trying to pull that stuff together and see what we're going to come out with. It's on Facebook, it's on all kinds of social media. We're kind of excited. We're already getting entries. So I'd love to see some kid designs. So if any of you out there have got kids, that would be helpful.
Thank you. So the next item is our city manager report.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Couple thoughts. First, good news or bad news, I've been reelected yet again to be the chair of the Eastside Public Safety Communications Agency. So I think I've now set a record for consecutive
congratulations,
elections.
Congratulations, sir.
So that just happened last week, and that also makes me continue to be a member of the joint board of the PCERN project, which is the ballot measure approved project. So my question for the council is, I think it's probably a good time to maybe have a presentation to the full council, kind of a update on that project from the PCERN staff, which is currently housed at King County. And so I want to see if I could go ahead and schedule something like that. It's possibly a special presentation, possibly a study session at some point. But a lot of good work is happening, but there's also some challenges. And this is about, obviously, emergency responder radio system for the entire county. So I think it's an important topic to bring you up to speed on.
Might be more of a study session type of topic, but I think everybody's supportive.
Okay, great. So then a little bit of juggling of calendars I want to talk to you about. So reminder that on June 12th is now your interviews for the Human Services Commission, but the rescheduled retreat is June 13th, so those end up hitting back-to-back. And at the same time, on June 20th, you have a CIP update that was scheduled. So part of the retreat is the fiscally focused retreat. When it was going to be in May was to talk about sort of a preview of the CIP update. So my suggestion to the council is if there's an interest in having a shorter retreat or maybe starting it later, say like 10 o'clock or something, we could actually keep the CIP update and move the retreat topics on the CIP to that study session and then maybe have a slightly shorter retreat on June 13th so that you have your interview night and then maybe have more of a morning before we actually do the do the retreat itself. So I want to see if you want me to do that, and then I can come back to you with a little more firm times and dates, but just wanted to highlight those.
That works.
Change set.
I think that makes sense. But one of the questions that did come up was, we've got 18 people to interview on the 12th, the night of the 12th. Even if we did our standard, do we want to expand beyond our standard five-minute interview for this particular group? Or do we want
to... Somebody start earlier?
Well, I think we just have to ask the question. I'm not sure whether we're ready to expand the process more because we're forming a whole commission.
Well, I think we may end up doing more questions.
So maybe expand it to, like, what, 10-minute interviews?
Whatever it takes for the questions that we end up deciding.
It's just Kathy's going to need to know in order to get this thing scheduled.
And just so you know, Leslie Miller is drafting some questions for council to consider.
Yeah.
So, yes, sounds like we might need a little bit more time.
So would you like to start earlier, or would you like to, because you'll be going longer. Right now we have you starting at 6.
So we'll just start earlier.
Although with 10 minutes, that would be till 9.
Yeah.
That's interview only.
Right.
So maybe we start at 5 or 5:30?
If you'd like, we can set up dinner for beforehand.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as there's food here, we will come.
That's right.
All right, we'll try. We'll shoot for 5 on the 12th.
That sounds good.
And then I'll make an adjustment on the 13th, come back to the council with an adjusted retreat schedule.
13th. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's all I have for now, unless the council has other calendar changes. I know Councilman Pascal had a question.
Yes. Talking about growth?
Yeah. I think there's real interest in the community about, what are we doing, given that I think things are kind of changing rapidly in the region just with the amount of housing and job growth. And we see it, we feel it, and we're getting a lot of questions about it. So I was thinking that asking council, just would we like to have a conversation somehow? And I don't know what that would look like, but but have a conversation, get an update, kind of where we're at. We know that we have 4,700 units in kind of the development pipeline right now, which I did some quick calculations. Our average household size is a little over 2. Well, for apartments, it's 1.9 people per apartment, and for houses, it's 2.4. So, I mean, that's almost 10,000 people in the next few years. So it's something that's worth, I think, exploring. I know that we have a work program that's very aggressive and a CIP that's very aggressive on doing a lot of work, but just kind of maybe it's a good check-in time.
I wonder if this might be one of those opportunities to have, I think it was Mr. Asher who brought up the idea that we might do more, have the opportunity for the 7 of us to get together with the city manager, have it noticed as a public meeting, but have more of an informal conversation.
Yes.
This would be maybe a good topic for such a thing. Yes?
Great. Yeah, maybe ultimately we could end up doing some kind of a town hall that actually opened it up and start sort of enter the conversation. What I heard yesterday at Total Night Conversations from folks was, everybody is feeling this, and there are things that we have planned that are going to be interventions, right? ST3 is going to be an intervention. The bus rapid transit is going to be an intervention. The street projects are going to be interventions for all of these things. But to get it laid out in a way that people can actually feel like, oh, yeah, they are putting plans together that incorporate transportation and street build-outs and that kind of stuff.
So it sounds like...
I could do that.
Are you capturing this, what we need to do?
Okay. Just a reminder, sort of related to that note, we also invested in the Forterra public outreach and focus groups and polling that they're doing around these same issues, because that's the same issues playing out in Redmond and Bellevue and Sammamish and Issaquah. So they're doing a lot of good work right now that will be available sometime in June to talk about what is the public feeling about this and maybe some suggestions about how to deal with it. So we can wrap that up and maybe into this conversation as well.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
As to calendar, the National Night Out and our meeting in August, is that in conflict yet again?
We will confirm.
It is not in conflict with the primary election.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So maybe we can take a look at those and address them. We still have some time.
Okay.
But we always like to be out at the National Night Out, for sure.
Okay. Merci.
Thank you.
Okay. That's all I have.
That's all you have? Calendar update complete? All right. Then it's time for items from the audience, because it's before 10 p.m. This is an additional time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than people speak on any one subject. However, both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to three proponents and up to three opponents may address the council. Is there anyone who would like to address the council at this time? Please come forward, sir. It's Mr. Kilbride.
Just me again.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Thanks for sticking with us.
Thanks for being here. I just listened to all the conversations about the parking, and parking's been a problem, parking. And just in my own little mind, I thought that instead of building here, moving this, we should just build a parking garage and do a park and ride like they do at the airport for all the employees. In the end run, it save us a lot of money and a lot of hassle, and leave a lot of parking downtown. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments? Yes, please. Come forward, Ms. Large.
A post-thought that I had about the affordable housing and the where do you work versus where do you live. I would like to suggest that the city, if we haven't already, develop some measurable objectives around the percent of the people who work in Kirkland who can afford to live in Kirkland, whether they're city employees or working in retail downtown or whatever, or restaurants. There may be some, sometimes measurable objectives help people move forward on things.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? If not, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. And I thank you all very much for being here, and we did an awful lot of good work tonight, so we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Oakland 4, Mayors 1.